Welcome to the stream. I'm Ahmed Jabedin, filling in for Femi Okay. Today, examining the origins of the universe with the James Webb Space Telescope. It's the largest telescope ever sent into space, and its mission is to observe the birthplaces of distant stars, planets, and galaxies. Astronomers say it's a breakthrough for science that may answer humanity's biggest questions, including where do we come from and are we alone? To get our conversation started, here's NASA astrophysicist Amber Strawn.
For me, the most exciting aspect of this new telescope is really the breadth of science we'll be able to do. We'll be able to study objects from within our own solar system all the way out to the most distant galaxies ever, the very first galaxies that were born after the Big Bang, and everything in space and time in between. And these first images that we've just released really just give us a glimpse, just a hint of what's going to be possible with this incredible new telescope. I'm so excited for the year of science that we already have planned, and I have no doubt that this telescope is really going to change the way that we understand the universe in ways that we haven't even dreamed of yet.
Joining us to explain the significance of the JWST is our panel of scientists in California, Jesse Christensen, a project scientist with the NASA Exoplanet Archive, Renee Doyen, a principal investigator for the Webb Telescope's Fine Guidance Sensor and Infrared Imager, known as NIRIS, and in Nova Scotia, Lamia Mola, an observational astronomer with the Dunlap Institute for Astronomy and Astrophysics. And of course, if you want to ask a question to our panel, jump into our live YouTube chat and you can be part of today's conversation. All right, so much to discuss. I want to start with the basics, kind of the emotion of this moment, if you will. Jesse, we built this, I say we, of course I haven't done anything, but we built this incredibly complex telescope. I believe it's 100 times at least more sensitive than its 30-year-old predecessor. Why is this so exciting to you? What does it actually enable us to do?
Well, Hubble has been such an amazing observatory for humanity for decades now, and there are some things where Hubble has just given us a glimpse. We have a hint. We think that there's something there, and we're very excited. Now, with JWST, we'll finally get to the answers in some of these incredible questions, like what's inside the atmospheres of these exoplanets we're finding? How far back can we see towards the dawn of the universe? So it's a step we've been wanting to take for a really long time. So it's very exciting that we're finally here and the telescope is performing as well as it is.
Right. And on that note, that it's performing as well as it is, I mean, I can imagine many things could have gone wrong, Renee. And, you know, that in of itself is a celebration or something worth celebrating. You know, with that in mind, we sent this, 1.5 kilometers, or million kilometers, if I'm not mistaken, and it's sending back data, and that data is digestible. To you, Renee, what is the most exciting element here?
Well, everything. I mean, you've said it. I mean, this is arguably the most complex machine that humanity has ever built, and we sent it 1.5 million kilometers away. And as you mentioned, many things could have gone wrong. First, you know, this telescope is so big. So we had to fold it in a big, you know, like a big origami figure in the fairing of a rocket, mm-hmm. and then send it 1.5 million kilometers. Then we had to deploy it. And you know, I used to describe this 2 weeks of deployment, this 7 days of terror. Well, really, it was 7 days of joy because things went so smoothly. And then we had to align these 18 segments with exquisite accuracy. You know, it's on... You can't imagine the precision you need to align these mirrors with one another, and yet it took several months. We did it, and it worked so well. And one thing to understand too is that this telescope is always behind a sun shield, always mm-hmm. in the dark. It has to be protected from the sun, and it's very cold out there. It's minus 233 Celsius, whatever in Fahrenheit. This is so cold. Mm-hmm. So we have to develop new technologies to operate this instrument at these temperatures. So it was a lot of challenge. It took 20 years. Now we're opening a new eyes in the sky to answer big questions about the origin of the universe. And are we alone? So, and, you know, for the first time, we will have a credible machine.
So on those big questions, just quickly, and maybe Lamia, we can start with you. We have in our YouTube chat, Solitary Kid, convinced that we're not alone, saying there's no way we are alone. And I'm wondering, beyond that question, that big question, what excites you as someone who's already processing some of the data that's being sent from your vantage point, Lemya?
Well, we have been waiting for this data for so long, and just right next door to me is the entire Canadian extragalactic team just sitting there, you know, going through this data, and we're just all crying out in joy every time we find these little galaxies, really red galaxies that we think are, you know, might be one of the first of the universe. These galaxies that are full of stars, which might very well like be our own sun and might have a planet like our Earth. So, you know, when you look at something like this, something that is like almost a time capsule where you're seeing galaxies at very different distances because of this wonderful property of light, mm-hmm. you know, coming to us at the same speed, you just cannot feel, you know, you cannot feel alone in this.
Certainly. I think many of us are excited by that prospect, and we'll get to that at the end of this conversation. But before we do, if I may, Renee, Jesse, you said something interesting, kind of comparing Hubble to this new telescope that we're celebrating today. And there is this tweet by John Christensen, not to be confused with someone from your family, I believe, but at least someone who created this really powerful tool. Take a look at this. I'm going to just scroll down a bit. This compares essentially... This is the new telescope, and this is the original sort of Hubble image, right? And this is the Southern Ring Nebula. Could you just, beyond sort of the fact that this looks like something that was photoshopped, what does all of this that we see here tell us that we didn't know before?
Right. So what we're looking at here is a planetary nebula, which astronomers are really bad at naming things. So I'll start by saying it doesn't actually have anything to do with planets. It's a planetary nebula. It's what happens when a star like our sun gets to the end of its life and starts puffing off all of its outer layers. And they create this gorgeous cloud that you see today. And the star in the middle pushes the cloud away. The detail that we have with JWST is going to allow us to discern much more about the physics, the actual physical mechanisms that are pushing the gas away, and how the gas is behaving. Gives us information about the medium that the gas is going into, the interstellar medium, what happens between stars. This gives us a glimpse at this.
And, you know, just to hear from someone else, if we can, kind of echoing some of those key points that you outlined, we have Christine Chen, an astronomer at the Space Telescope Science Institute, who really highlights for us what she believes is so groundbreaking about this moment. Take a look.
These first early release observations really give us a glimpse into how JWST will transform our understanding of the universe. JWST was designed to peer back to the edge of time to see the first galaxies forming. And indeed, the near-infrared camera captured Webb's first deep field in just 12 and a half hours, revealing a sky teeming with distant galaxies. And each galaxy has been imaged in exquisite detail, revealing galaxies with warps, bright star clusters, and those enshrouded in dust. And our newly formed understanding goes beyond these beautiful images to include spectra that reveal precise distances to individual galaxies. What used to take Hubble days now takes JWST hours. And as a result, almost every observation will provide a glimpse into the distant universe.
So, you know, Renee, when we say we are going to be exploring exoplanet atmospheres in more depth now as a result of this new telescope, what does that mean? I mean, some of our YouTube commenters, Ghost in the Blur, saying this is unbelievable and exciting, but when will we prove other life besides us exists? That is the big question. We also have someone named Ahmed saying, well, the more the discoveries, the more the unanswered questions. So do we anticipate that some of the discoveries being made already or that will be made will be surprises? And do you think this is going to really for sure make us know that there's life out there?
Well, we can't know whether Webb will detect life, but what we can be absolutely sure that will make giant step towards answering that question. You have to understand what we need to do. So we're trying to detect an exoplanet atmosphere. We're trying to detect the molecules that's in there. You know, on Earth, there's molecules like oxygens, and those are made by life. But you know, we haven't really done that yet on small planets. We have detected the atmospheres on gas giant planets like the one we saw. The nearest instrument take this beautiful spectrum where you see these bumps and wiggle. You have to get used to these things. You're going to see many of these spectra in the coming year. And so that spectrum proves without any doubt that there's water in that molecules. And we can also detect methane, CO, And when you combine with the other science instrument, you get a whole suite of capability to detect molecules. And that's actually the key to one day answer the question, is there, you know, biosignatures and or gas that are due to biological activities? You have to understand that Hubble's view was in terms of colors, but maybe like this, you know, mm-hmm. Hubble's look at, and now Webb is like, you cannot see right. my hand. This
right.
is completely different. And so just like the deep field, we have a completely new perspective and with exquisite details. One big limitation about Hubble is that it goes around its the Earth every 90 minutes. So when you try to measure a light curve from an exoplanet, it's always interrupted. In this case, with Webb, we can continuously observe these objects without right. any interruptions, and that makes a big difference.
And Renee, as you're speaking there, I was showing the audience just kind of the comparison of the Carina Nebula, for example, and some of those elements that you were describing. I do want to kind of ask, or actually let me let Eric Baker, he sent us a question that I'll put to you, Renee. Take a listen to what Eric had to say.
Given that the James Webb Space Telescope only sees certain colors that are on the spectrum of light visible to humans, how do scientists go about colorizing the images that we get to see online?
Renee? Forgive me, sorry, Jesse? Sorry,
yeah,
Renee.
Go ahead, Jesse.
Sure. So what we have to do is we have to take the wavelengths that James Webb Space Telescope is looking at, which is in the infrared, which mm-hmm. is heat, and we have to map those into optical wavelengths that we can see with our eyes. So we take that section of the wavelength that we can't see and we remap it in mm-hmm. something we can see. So these beautiful images are not what you would see with your eye if you were out in space looking at these nebulae. We wouldn't see that. But they are giving us this rich amount of detail about the different wavelengths that these objects are emitting at.
And so it's not that there was no infrared before. It's just that much more advanced, right, if you will. Like, the Hubble had this capacity to a certain extent. I mean, I'm reiterating, maybe I'm wrong. I think I'm wrong. Tell me, Jesse, correct us.
I just want to mention, so the previous great observatory that was an infrared telescope was Spitzer. Mm-hmm. So Spitzer was a NASA mission that operated from 2003 to 2019. Mm-hmm. And it had infrared capabilities and was able to see glimpses of this, again, give us hints about what was there and answer many interesting questions, but mm-hmm. leave us wanting more. And Webb is giving us more.
And, you know, obviously yeah. we've been celebrating so far. I see that our two other guests are in agreement with you nodding there, but I would be remiss to not ask about some controversy. Of course, there's always controversy. We have, for example, this tweet saying, seeing the images from JWST comes with the bittersweet knowledge that the person the observatory is named after would not have wanted me or the dozens of other queer astronomers I know involved in this incredible achievement. It deserves better. Using that hashtag there, rename JWST, a lot of people might say, well, who cares? Why is this controversial? Your thoughts on this, Jesse?
Yeah, so James Webb was a NASA administrator during the Apollo years and was very instrumental in having the successful Apollo missions. Prior to his time at NASA, he was in leadership at the State Department when the State Department was going through this period of purging LGBT people from the State Department. This mm-hmm. was in the early 50s. Mm-hmm. And it's not clear that James Webb had any specific role in that, but right. he was in leadership in the State Department at the time. And so then it comes into this, you know, what responsibility did he have to stop it? You know, was he a product of his time? Was he following orders? Mm-hmm. It's very unclear the extent to which he was involved in this. So there's just some murkiness, and it's overshadowed things a bit. It's made people uncomfortable because you don't right. want to think that this incredible new instrument that was built for right. everyone right. was named after someone who wasn't for everyone.
I understand. No, that's a great way of putting it. Lamia, you were going to say something?
Oh, I want to add, the James Webb Space Telescope, it's now being launched in an era which is where science is now a lot more open, and now we are accessible mm-hmm. to people around the world in a way that maybe the Hubble Space Telescope or the previous missions have not have been. We now have the data that was released today is actually available for anyone around the world mm-hmm. to download and analyze. The softwares that we are using to analyze this data is also more accessible.
Yeah.
And I think because the world post-pandemic has also changed, where we are now more able to, you know, connect with each other, conduct meetings and researches over online. I think we are moving to an era where, with the James Webb, where we will see people from all over the world coming in into and getting, you know, getting to do science with this wonderful telescope in a way that has not have happened before. So I think there's, you know, there's a lot of things to look forward to.
No, most certainly. And among them, as much as I want to look forward, and we should, and there is so much to look forward to, I want to ask you, just for a little bit of context, Renee, you know, Hubble versus Webb, if you will, the last time NASA launched an observatory of such kind of importance and significance, it was really deemed a disaster, if I'm not mistaken, in 1990. Some, you know, astronomers like Sandra Faber, others saying it was an absolute kind of catastrophe. Why is that? And I don't want to focus too much, but how would you compare this moment?
Well, Hubble, what you're referring to is when Hubble was launched, he had some eyesight problem, and that was an issue, a mistake made, which these things are not easy to do, right?
Of course.
But of course, we learned from, but it was fixed, you know, because Hubble is close to the Earth orbit, so we could send the shuttle and change the instrument to correct its eyesight. And then Hubble came back with his good eyesight, and, you know, it truly revolutionized astronomy. Now, we learned from that, and so that we were very careful with JWST to not repeat the same mistake, and, you know, there's no problem with the telescope. And as I said, it's a very complex machine, but its deployment and its commissioning mm-hmm. went fairly smoothly. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we should be proud. And one point I want to mention is that what is very significant about this project is that this is an international project. Mm-hmm. And we live in troubled times with wars, Ukraine. And here's a project where humanity gets together mm-hmm. and with common goals about understanding the universe. And that was quite an achievement to do this, you know, NASA, Canada, and Europe all together to make this telescope now for the world. Mm-hmm. Now everyone can use this telescope.
Most certainly, and I appreciate you making that point. I also, you know, just looking at some of the numbers here, I mean, just to put this into context for us, Jesse, I might be wrong, but I think the universe is about 13 billion years old, and we've been around for, what, about a million years? Again, my math is horrible, but the point being, with all these trillions of galaxies and just seeing those images, how they compare, what can you share with us about how this gives us a new kind of macro sense of where we fit into the world and where to invest our resources in the future? A lot of people might say, why spend $10 billion looking into outer space when we could be spending it here to fix our planet Earth?
Yeah, these are really big, important questions. And it's not a small amount of money, right? It's a reasonable amount of money. I would say it comes back to the fact that you referenced this at the start of the show. These are some of humanity's oldest questions. Like, where do we come from? Are we alone? And where are we going? And the deeper we can look into the detail of the universe around us, the closer we get to the answers to those questions. I think a lot about what it would mean if we found life on another planet. You know, how would that change society? Would we all just get up in the morning and read the newspaper and the headlines would change the next day? Or would it change something fundamental about how we treat the planet and how we treat each other and how we treat the universe? You know, there's a lot of talk about colonizing Mars, for instance, and that's really interesting and problematic. Like, are we allowed to just go and take over space? You know, that didn't always end well on Earth. So we have to think really carefully about what we're doing. And things like JWST give us the information to make more informed decisions, better decisions about what we're going to do as a species.
Wow, that was... go on, please, Renee.
Yeah, I just want to add that, you know, we often take for granted all we have around us, right? But what we don't appreciate is all the innovations we have has an origin. And in fact, when you go in details, it goes back to answering basic questions. Mm-hmm. For example, I'll give you an example. The camera that looks at me is a technology that was the devised in the mid-70s, not to do a camera to do TV shows. It was to equip the Hubble Space Telescope to understand the universe. And so this is through, you know, NASA funding to develop that technology. And now today, this is everywhere. It's not just for TV. This is medical imaging. So, you know, you should thank astronomers if we can see each other and take a selfie. This, you know, we are a curious species, and this is the curiosity is the deepest root of innovation. So fundamental science is fundamental to all we have around us.
Yeah, I wrote that down. Curiosity is the deepest root of innovation. I feel like someone should put that on a T-shirt. Lemia, I know you want to jump in. Go ahead.
Yeah, just to add to that, the budget that's being invested in James Webb, that's over a period of, you know, 25 years. But that's only a fraction of the cost that the nations who have built this telescope spend on military budget every year. I've seen a lot of debate about whether we should be spending more money, whether we should be investing this money in education. Well, we are doing this because we want to learn about the universe. This is all coming back to that.
And that's a great point. I actually want to put another question to you. A lot of people on YouTube asking about black holes, and I know there's you know, always a conversation about that online. We have Ardi Benusi saying, how far back in time can be looked with this telescope? I know, Lemia, that's what you focus on. I do want to just piggyback one more question in here that was sent to us from Denise Lawrence. Take a listen, and then we'll come to you, Lemia.
Hello. I'd like to know if you have images of black holes and if you can even see a black hole.
So how far back can we look, and are we seeing black holes?
Well, we are trying to figure out how far can we look. We are trying to find, you know, the galaxies, the structures that have formed in the very first few hundred million years of the universe, from the first maybe 400 million years right after the universe. And I guess the answer is just wait for to. We'll just have to wait to find out how far we look at.
That's a good answer. Quick poll across our panel before we go. So the telescope has, as we heard, already detected water in the form of steam. You spoke about potentially methane and other gases being detected, Renee. Will we detect signs of alien life, for lack of a better term, in the universe within 10 years? That's what some NASA scientists are saying. Jesse, your vote, yes or no?
I don't think so. 10 years is too short. Give me 20 to 30 years and I'll say yes.
All right. What about you, Renee?
I was going for 2 decades. Yeah, 10 years is a bit short.
Is a bit short. And Lemia?
Yeah, I would say along the same line.
So yeah, you know,
if Renee and Jesse says two decades, I will go with that.
But go ahead, Renee, quickly.
But, you know, you have to realize 2 decades, this is very short. It means that we, our generations, we'll see this groundbreaking discovery. And that's really disturbing when you think about it. So humanity has reached technological maturity to answer that question. And that, you know, we should appreciate that. This is really amazing. And, you know, I'm not going to say that Webb is going to do that. Mm-hmm. But as I said, it's going to make giant step to understand the habitability of region. I think in 5 years we'll say, okay, here's a planet. We know there's water in its atmospheres, mm-hmm. and there's other molecules, and it looks like this may be a habitable world. That's the place to look at. And this will probably have other missions, other big telescopes on the ground to re-look at the system. And this is where Webb will make a major discovery.
And then just to clarify, you know, we've discovered water and oxygen, or am I wrong about that? Jesse?
Oxygen, O2. I'm not sure about molecular O2. We have seen water, we have seen methane, we have seen carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide,
right.
And we've seen sodium. I don't know about oxygen O2, yep. Actually.
I don't know what the concoction...
No,
we haven't. We have that clarity. I don't know. I'm pretending I know what concoction of things need to be found to determine that there is life out there. No, I'm joking. But certainly a topic that really opens and expands the mind, even if it's hard to wrap your mind around this discovery and all the discoveries that lay ahead. Thank you so much, Jesse, Renee, and Damia. That's all the time we have here at The Stream for today. Thanks for watching, and see you next time.